United States versus Cranley, Mr. Bertrand or Ms. Bertrand? Ms. Bertrand. Sorry.
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court's decision in this matter hinges on what the court found to be a genuine threat of revocation had the defendant asserted his Fifth Amendment privilege, but the record is bare of such a threat, either expressed or implied. Indeed, all that the defendant could say in his testimony was that he felt obligated to speak because, quote, "It was just the way I felt. I mean, the way the whole scenario was. I felt obligated to speak to these people," period, end quote. That's the transcript at 44. This court in Humphrey and the Supreme Court in Murphy have specifically rejected claims of compelled Fifth Amendment waivers based on the defendant's feelings, absent an express or implied threat of revocation if the defendant asserts his Fifth Amendment privilege. And here, there is no threat.
It seems very odd there should be a Fifth Amendment privilege here. You'd think one condition of probation would be that you waive your privilege, wouldn't you?
Your Honor, in the state of Wisconsin, they have not required probationers to waive their Fifth Amendment privilege, and in fact, it's protected by
state
law.
Not a state issue. This is a federal issue.
Correct, sir. I don't think that...
But wouldn't that be sensible? I mean, probation restricts people in a lot of ways. One of the most natural ways, you think, would be, of course, you're not going to be able to plead the Fifth when you're asked by your probation officer what you've been doing last week. What's the sense of that?
Your Honor, I'm comfortable with the way the law is now.
Why? It doesn't make any sense. When you think of all the restrictions that are placed on probationers, surely you would, if you were faced with the question of being in jail or being on probation, you'd much rather make a deal which says, yes, I'll submit to restrictions if you'll, you know, let me wander around on my own. And one of them is, of course, I'll be candid with the probation office. So I just don't understand why the government doesn't routinely require a waiver of Fifth Amendment as a condition to consenting to probation.
Your Honor, my discomfort with the court's proposition is that you would then create the classic penalty situation that we're trying to avoid here. And I think what's telling is the court's discussion of the requirement of candor and the distinction between being required to be truthful but not being required to give up your right to silence.
A person on probation, someone ought to be in prison, but he's being let out because the prisons are crowded, maybe you think it's better for rehabilitation or something, sort of halfway house, whatever it is. You think in a rational system of criminal justice, you'd say to probationers, well, you're giving up all sorts of rights in exchange for being at liberty. And one of them is, you're going to have to level with a probation officer. If he asks you what you were doing last Thursday night when you were robbing a bank, you can't say to him, well, no, I might incriminate myself if I told you the truth. Of course that should be grounds for revocation.
Your Honor, I know that this court has upheld similar requirements, such as...
The problem is that as a result of this, we get this, you know, extremely artificial business. Mm-hmm. In custody, out of custody, penalty, why did you speak, what did you think? It's all so unnecessary.
What I sense the court saying is that it would be cleaner, in a way, if probationers...
Well, I think what you're arguing is kind of hyper-technical and has no real relation to either the Constitution or the purposes of criminal justice.
What the government is arguing
what
is that...
What you did, whether you're a client, has not been subjected to a wrong, it seems to me.
The government. No. She's the government.
She's represented by the government.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. Thank you, Judge.
These questions are really helping you.
Yes, and I'm trying to...
Oh, I know. There's so few appeals from the government that when someone appeals in a criminal case, we, or at least I, often fail. Okay, so let me ask you. Why isn't the government... These are much more pointed questions for you than I thought. Why on earth are you putting us through this? Because you're not extracting a Fifth Amendment waiver when you admit people to probation.
Well, Your Honor, the state of Wisconsin is not a party to this. But I think that while it would seem more efficient and cleaner in a way to require people to waive that Fifth Amendment privilege, it certainly, as a prosecutor, would make my job easier.
Well, what happens if you're on probation and you have a condition of probation that says you can't leave the state of Wisconsin? So a probation officer calls someone in who's on probation and says, I heard a report that you were in Missouri last week. Were you there or not? You say, well, I refuse to answer on the grounds that I might incriminate myself. What would happen?
Well, Your Honor, I think what would happen is that's a violation of his, and this is somewhat hyper-technical as well, that's a violation of his probation conditions and not necessarily a new violation of law. And so I think there, my understanding of state of Wisconsin probation would be that he could be subject to revocation because we're not talking about
You think he should be subject to revocation if he refuses to answer a question asked by a probation officer that relates to a term and condition of his probation?
Your Honor, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually don't feel comfortable necessarily requiring people to give up their Fifth Amendment privilege.
In a civil lawsuit, if you're asked a question and you refuse to answer, it can't be construed against you. What's anything wrong with that?
Well, except that here someone's liberty is at stake, and the Fifth Amendment particularly protects them against having to make such self-incriminating answers. While you can be compelled to appear, you cannot be compelled to incriminate yourself, for example, in the grand jury situation that we discussed in our brief. And there's a lot of things about the Constitution that make my job more difficult, but I'm uncomfortable with them.
The Justice Department is constantly granting people immunity, and then they're forced to testify, right?
Right, but that's after a grant of immunity, sir, where it can't be used against him.
Yeah, sure, can't be used against him, but nevertheless, people can be forced to testify. They can be sent to prison because they refuse to testify. So the court, because they've been given immunity, right? If you're given immunity and you refuse to testify, you can be sent to prison.
Right.
So in other words, you know, Fifth Amendment isn't absolute. There isn't some absolute right to keep silent. And Judge Evans' question poses it very sharply. That's ridiculous to say the person can deny that he take the Fifth Amendment about, you know, whether he complied with a condition of probation.
Then
you have to get into make some elaborate investigation to find out whether he left the state. What's the sense of that?
Your Honor, if I may just clarify my answer to Judge Evans, what I wanted my answer to say was that I think in that scenario, he would be required and face revocation if he did not answer his probation agent, because we're not talking about new violations of law. And I think
what you're doing, your argument in the brief is, having accepted this absurd premise about the Fifth Amendment, you then assault us with a whole bunch of implausible, highly technical distinctions and arguments. Fellow wasn't in custody, he didn't think that he had to answer and all that. That's what you force us to consider, all these highly technical, implausible arguments, because you won't just extract the waiver as a matter of bargaining with these people. It's not forcing them to give up their Fifth Amendment privilege.
Your Honor, I have some rebuttal time saved. I would just like to note, with regard to your last comment, the government did not assert the custody issue. It was only on the reply brief. We did not raise that. The only issue we raised at first was whether or not Murphy applies to the probation setting here in which the defendant gave a statement. And I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, please.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bertrand. Mr. Mullins?
You've already been asked.
Thank you. I think I might know what's coming. Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Brian Mullins. I represent Mr. Cranley in this case. I do want to clarify a couple of issues that came up in the government's argument. This was a case where Mr. Cranley was asked by his state probation officer to report to the state probation office to interview with a federal ATF agent. So I think this is kind of a unique fact to this case, and I don't know if an immunity would apply, because the state could grant immunity to Mr. Cranley for any questions he would answer with respect to conditions of his state probation. But I don't believe that there's a federal immunity available to Mr. Cranley in this case. Certainly they could have if they wanted to, but then that really would have obviated any kind of basis for their investigation. And let me also just clarify that the subject matter of the interview was not anything to do with Mr. Cranley's probationary status. It dealt with a crime that occurred before Mr. Cranley was placed on probation and before the crime for which Mr. Cranley was placed on probation, before he committed that crime. So I think with those clarifications, maybe it may clear up some of the court's concerns about immunity in the Fifth Amendment and its effect on probationers.
Yes, well, I was obviously very muddled, but also, so you're saying this probation is purely a matter of state law. So, but now these Wisconsin judges, do they ever make it a condition of probation that you give up your Fifth Amendment privilege?
I believe they do. I believe the state can offer immunity from any kind of, say a condition of your probation is to answer questions truthfully. If a result of an answer is going to be an incriminating answer, the state will offer immunity, or the state cannot use that answer against them.
Well, but that I don't understand. Why don't they just say, look, you know, you give up a lot when you're a criminal and convicted and so on. One thing you're going to give up, if you want to be free, at liberty, you give up your right to, give up your Fifth Amendment right.
I believe it may be a result of the Supreme Court's decision in Minnesota versus Murphy, where they indicated that if a probationer is placed in that penalty situation, that statement will not be available to the government for use in a criminal trial or to incriminate that person.
No, but that wasn't a case, I don't think, maybe wrong about that also, but where the person explicitly waives his Fifth Amendment immunity as part of a plea bargain involving probation.
No, I don't. That's correct. I don't believe that.
You can do that. You could do that.
I believe you could. Yes.
And then we wouldn't have the case.
I mean, I think perhaps anything is possible in the plea bargaining context. It's
not anything,
but anything within reason and within the Constitution, and certainly the state could impose that as a condition. But in this case, that wasn't the fact. The fact was that Mr. Cranley was asked to come in to speak about matters that didn't affect his probationary status. He was asked to come in by a state PO into the state probation office, and the state probation officer was present for at least the first interview, even though this was a federal investigation that the state probation office really had no interest in. And that's why...
But the problem here is he never invoked his privilege against office privilege.
Correct. That's our roadblock. And we argue that the district court's decision that the privilege is self-executing is supported by Minnesota versus Murphy, because the state implied to Mr. Cranley that invoking the privilege would result in revocation. And
when
I believe,
did they do that?
I believe there are several factors to how they implied it. First of all, I think you have to go back to November when he was first placed on probation. He was made aware of the conditions of probation, one of which is to report as directed, another of which is to... It says that he shall answer truthfully and correctly all questions posed to him by his probation officer. And I think you can impute that condition that he answer questions truthfully by a probation officer to the ATF in this case, because of the ATF's use of the probation officer to gain Cranley's cooperation. So I think that's the first thing. Second, he was called by his probation officer.
Are you saying if you're called into the probation office, you're on probation, and the probation officer says, well, have you done anything bad in the last 6 months since I've seen you? And you say, well, nothing except I murdered a couple of people and they're in the trunk of a car. That would be not admissible.
No, I think that would be.
Because he has to answer truthfully.
I think according to Minnesota versus Murphy, that would be admissible. I mean, I think that is what Minnesota versus Murphy was about.
Why is that different?
The difference between Minnesota versus Murphy is that the probation office was working, or actually the ATF was working with the probation office. I think that's one of the crucial distinctions. The questions posed by the ATF
That could be argued the other way around. You could say, well, when he's being interviewed by the ATF without the presence of the probation officer, he's not worried about revocation.
And that's what the court held in Humphrey, but I think that is distinguishable too. I think it's the combination of the probation officer with the law enforcement officer that creates the self-executing privilege because of the coerciveness involved in that. And
have this sort of narrow path, it seems. One between custody. The court ultimately found it was not in custody, which would have required a Miranda warning.
Correct.
Then we go the other direction, where it's you're supposed to answer truthfully, but nobody said you had to answer. So we have this.
We believe it was implied that.
Well, I know, but that's the path we have to stay. You didn't have to give the Miranda warning. Secondly, you could have refused to answer. Only thing he was told is, if you say anything, it's got to be the truth.
Correct.
So that seems to me at least where we're trying to draw this little.
And our position is that he was in custody because of the sort of penalty situation with which he found himself. Either talk to the ATF agent or risk revocation. We say that's custody.
But custody. Ordinarily, after you make a statement, which he did in January, and then he left the probation office, that's not what we ordinarily think of as custody.
No, but whether he was free to leave, I think his ability to leave, at least he reasonably
thought.
Where is the
probation office?
It's in Racine.
No. I mean, is it in a courthouse, is it in a police station, or what?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Well, that's kind of important, is that, I mean, if the probation office were in a police station, you could say, well, yeah, you don't really feel that comfortable about getting up and walking out of a police station. On the other hand, if it's in a courthouse or in the post office or in an office building, you'd think, well, that wouldn't create a custodial atmosphere, because you assume you're free to leave other types.
I do know it's a secure facility, and that he needed to be buzzed out in order to leave the probation office. So there is some kind of security attached to the office.
I wish you could have that in an office building.
Right.
You could, yes. And I would be happy to submit a supplemental brief or at least a memorandum on the exact physical layout of the Racine probation office. But
we can always look it up on the web, right?
Yes.
Hasn't moved.
But getting back to why we believe that it was implied that invoking the privilege would have, or at least that he reasonably believed that invoking the privilege would have resulted in revocation. The probation officer advised him before, the first interview with the ATF, that he was required to tell the truth as a condition of his probation. The probation officer was present for the first interview, and as I said, the interview took place at that probation office. And the second interview, the probation officer was at least present for the beginning of the interview. So there was the combination of the probation officer's presence and the ATF agent's presence, we believe, creates a penalty situation, and that is resulting in a self-executing privilege as found by the district court. Unless there are any further questions, I will
Thank you very much, Mr. Lowe.
Thank
you. So, Ms. Birch, I derailed your argument terribly, not only mixing your clients up, but also blaming you for Wisconsin probation policy. So we'll give you a generous 3 minutes to reply.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. First, I have some concern about Mr. Mullen's discussion of Minnesota versus Murphy. And there, the specifically found that he was not in a penalty situation. Even after he was not called in once but twice, and the first time warned by his probation officer that if you don't come in, I'm going to issue a warrant for you. Second time he comes in, and at that point makes a statement about the rape and murder for which he takes up on appeal after the conviction. And also in that decision, they discuss how this information would be used. And I think that's important in looking at getting back to Judge Evans' question about what if we're talking about him leaving the state versus did you do this armed robbery? Did you get involved with these guns? And in footnote 2 of Murphy, they discuss this and say that even if the probation agent had as her intention only reporting this to the police, only getting inculpatory information that she could turn over to the police about this possible rape and murder, that would not change the result of Murphy. And here, I think that's important. When you look at this set of facts with the probation agent organizing these meetings and the ATF agent asking her questions, but I think that one thing that the defense can't get past is this court's finding in Humphrey, where the defendant was advised, and that's the word that this court used, advised to meet with the FBI at the FBI offices, which the government notes in its brief could be considered somewhat less comfortable than meeting at your probation agent's office. And Humphrey claimed to feel that same feeling, that I just felt like I had to give it up. I felt like this requirement to be truthful equaled the requirement to give up my Fifth Amendment privilege. And this court said, no, that's not enough. And here there is no implied threat. There's at some point the defendant reviewing his probation conditions and stating in the transcript, well, I know I went over them at some point, but I can't say when, at some point before the meeting. That's not enough. Being required to tell the truth is not the same as being required to waive your privilege. And with that, I have nothing further unless the court has any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms.
Thank you.
And thank you to Ms.